chapter 20. Yeah. This is a long volume.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Going to be reading from Canto 3, Chapter 23, which is entitled Devahuti's Lamentation, which is what happens at the end of the chapter. But yesterday we discussed verse 2 from this chapter. Now we'll be discussing verses 3, 4, and 5. And this is the jubilation part. She just got married and she's with Kardama Muni. And we'll, little background. Well, in text 3, Prabhupada writes, the beginning of the purport, here are some of the qualities of a great husband's great wife. So a little bit about the great husband, because that's previous chapters. The greatness of Kardama Muni is very special. Besides, he, along with Devahuti, became father and mother of God, meaning as a avatar, he chose to appear as their son. Kardama Muni was one of the direct sons of Lord Brahma. So in sequence, after Brahma was created from the lotus, and atop the lotus flower of coming from the body of Garbhodakshai Vishnu. So self-born Lord Brahma, third in sequence, Lord Brahma produced the four Kumaras, and then Lord Shiva. And how exalted are they? They're the heads of Sampradayas, Vaishnava Sampradayas, along with Lord Brahma, so there's three. And then Swayambhuva Manu, another of the incarnations, Manvantar. The Manus are great personalities within each universe. And then the great sages, one of whom was Kardama Muni. So direct son of Lord Brahma, superlatively elevated. So, and this is at the dawn of creation. Creation has taken place. The Manus, as well as the great sages, well, with the exception of Narada, their function or their service was perfection, achieve perfection, engage in austerities for increasing their great strength so that they could help populate the universe that Lord Brahma just created with good population and even varieties of species. That's going to be discussed later in this canto. So amongst them, Kardama Muni is spoken of in detail. He was residing in an ashram in a secluded place in the forest, and as was requested of the Kumaras when they said, no thanks dad, we don't want to become householders, Kardama accepted that instruction, and he was qualifying himself to have good praja, good offspring. But in addition to that obedience to his father's order or request, he was a pure devotee and he was a mystic. So as a pure devotee, he had parental affection, vatsalya rasa, towards the personality of Godhead. So he desired to have the personality of Godhead as his son. And lo and behold, the personality of Godhead appeared before him, standing on the back of Garuda, with Garuda's arms flapping majestically. And Kardama Muni just fell before Lord Vishnu and stood up and looked up and offered beautiful prayers. Lord Vishnu spoke to him poignant words. You pleased me very much by your pure devotion, so I've come before you. And he laid out a whole sequence of what's next. Like, he, his whole life was planned out or displayed before him what would happen. The emperor of the universe is going to come here very soon, in 2 days. And he's going to come with his wife, and he's going to come with his daughter, and she's as qualified as you are. And he describes her qualifications a bit and says that he's going to offer his daughter in marriage to you, and you should say yes. And with his daughter, you'll have nine daughters as children, and you will have me as your son. So all of that's going to happen. And by having me as your son, and as through all of this process, continue as you're doing, and you'll achieve spiritual perfection, as if it wasn't already spiritual perfection, seeing the Supreme Lord, having the Lord as his son. So Kardama Muni is not just a nice guy or good sadhaka or something. He's a perfected being. And a great mystic on top of it. So Lord Vishnu goes. 2 days later, Swayambhu Mata comes. This wonderful exchange between the two. Marriage is arranged. Marriage is performed. Swayambhu Mata goes back to his palace. He lives out the rest of his life that's described. So now it's the scene is the princess, the daughter of the emperor of the universe, is living in a forest, undergoing forest life in austerities for thousands of years. Sita was there for 14 years. This is thousands of years. This is Satya Yuga. And so he has the greatest of qualifications. She has comparable, equal, greatest of qualifications, and here's a description of her great qualifications. Of course, in different capacities, in this particular situation, she chose her husband, so she's taking the position as the one who's assisting her husband. She's the daughter of a Kshatriya. She's taking the position of a Brahmani, like that, just serving her husband. She could have been queen. Instead, she's living in a forest, and she's happy because her happiness is in the position as a good wife serving her, a great wife serving her great husband. So here's the verses, starting with text 3. Working sanely and diligently, that's a good start, she pleased her very powerful husband, giving up all lust, pride, envy, greed, sinful activities, and vanity. And Prabhupada focuses on the vanity part. Purport. Here are some of the qualities of a great husband's great wife. Karva Muni is great by spiritual qualification. Such a husband is called Tejiyamsham. Tejiyamsham. Most powerful. So it comes from Tejas. He has great strength, great power. Most powerful. Prabhupada said on a number of occasions, the wealth of a king is his treasury and his army and his fame and his power. The wealth of a vaishya is his mercantile holdings and those kinds of, you know, commodities. And the wealth of a brahmana is his austerity. Would sound like a contradiction. The wealth of a brahmana is his austerity. The wealth of a brahmana is to not have things and be happy with not having things. That sounds like he's poor. The wealth of a brahmana is being poor. It's not being poor, it's his austerities. This is, again, it's tejas. Committing the mind and senses to activities that require refined consciousness and are explicitly, deliberately pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's his qualification. He was not only doing that, he was great at it, and he had become greatly powerful as a result. So Tejiyamsam, most powerful, by spiritual qualification. Although wife may be equal to her husband in advancement in spiritual consciousness, she should not be vainly proud. Sometimes it happens that the wife comes from a very rich family. He's giving examples now. As did Devahuti, the daughter of Emperor Swayambhuvamanu. She could have been very proud of her parentage, but that is forbidden. He repeats, the wife should not be proud of her parental position. So, whatever one's position, of course his position is superior to hers, but push that to the side and she can be proud of hers. And she purposefully recognizing tendency for that is there. So let me just dismiss it completely. So she did. She must always be submissive to the husband and must give up all vanity. He repeats, as soon as the wife becomes proud of her parentage, her pride creates great misunderstanding between the husband and wife, and their nuptial life is ruined. So he used the same misunderstanding word. Interesting way to describe what happens between husbands and wives. Misunderstanding. Like, you know, friction or heat or whatever. But it's simply due to a misunderstanding. Misunderstanding of how am I to properly conduct myself given the circumstances. It's worth saying, we discussed it yesterday. This is not a blanket statement over all of the bizarre anomalies of Kali Yuga where people are abusive and crazy. This is speaking of, you know, a Vedic paradigm where there's at least a modicum of culture here at the superlative position of culture, and what does it look like? But the principles are beneficial for peaceful, progressive household life. Devahuti was very careful about that, not holding on to pride of her particular birth and family position. And therefore it is said here that she gave up pride completely. Then an example. Devahuti was not unfaithful, the most sinful activity for a wife is to accept another husband or another lover. Chanakya Pandit has described four kinds of enemies at home. I've heard this one many times. Prabhupada would quote this. Here it is again. If the father is in debt, he is considered an enemy. If the mother has selected another husband in the presence of her grown-up children, she is considered to be an enemy. If a wife does not live well with her husband, but deals very roughly, then she is an enemy. And if a son is a fool, he is also an enemy. In family life, father, mother, wife, and children are assets. But if the wife or mother accepts another husband in the presence of her husband or son, then according to Vedic civilization, she is considered an enemy. A chaste and faithful woman must not practice adultery. That is a greatly sinful act. So it's pretty explicit, although these things go on in modernity. Religious principles are cast to the side and other standards of doing and not doing are taken up. So just the verse again, he's been speaking about, Prabhupada in the purport has been speaking mainly about vanity and pride. There's other very exalted qualities. Apramata. There's pramata and apramata. Pramata means mad, and apramata means sane. So she was sane. And udyata. Udyata. The effort that she made was very strong. Very, very diligently she did the duties in serving her husband and all the things that he required. Udyata. Apramata udyata. Sanely and diligently she pleased her very powerful husband, giving up all lust, pride, envy, greed, sinful activities, and vanity. So he was very special, great, and she was very special, great personality, with great personality, decorated with great qualities. Then, text 4 and 5, the daughter of Manu, who was fully devoted to her husband, looked upon him as greater even than providence. Thus, she expected great blessings from him, and great blessings are coming up. Having served him for a long time, she grew weak and emaciated due to her religious observances. Seeing her condition, Kardama Muni, the foremost of celestial sages, was overcome with compassion and spoke to her in a voice choked with great love. So he wasn't a stone. He wasn't a hard-hearted person demanding this and that. He understood the sacrifice that she was making. He appreciated the service as well as the sacrifice and the love that she had extended to him. And seeing her physical condition, he wanted to reciprocate as well as perfectly knowing her heart. So that what he speaks is also very nice, but here's this verse, again, extolling the virtue and good quality of this great personality, Devahuti. Purport, the wife is expected to be of the same category as the husband. What does that mean? She must be prepared to follow the principles of the husband. And then there will be happy life. If the husband is a devotee and the wife is materialistic, there cannot be any peace in the home. The wife must see the tendencies of the husband and must be prepared to follow him. Example, from Mahabharata we learn that when Gandhari understood that her would-be husband, Dhritarashtra, was blind, she immediately began to practice blindness herself. She then covered her eyes and played the part of a blind woman. She decided that since her husband was blind, she must act like a blind woman. Otherwise, she would be proud of her eyes and her husband would be seen as inferior. So you know the description. Because Santanu was absent, Bhishma actually made this arrangement. He went to Gandhar, and because he had heard of this most qualified Gandhari, and requested Gandhari to become the king of Gandhar, which is same place as in Afghanistan today, Kandahar. So he requested the king for his daughter, because he had heard the virtue of his daughter, to accept the position as the wife of Dhritarashtra. And the king considered, you know, the pros and cons. He considered, I don't know if this is a good idea, that Dhritarashtra is blind. He knew, it wasn't like a secret. He was blind. But he's royalty. Then on the other side was, he's royalty, and must therefore be very qualified, a very noble person. And if there's a marriage between our kingdom and the Kauravas' kingdom, then it will be, it'll give strength to our dynasty, and or something like that. You know how kings calculate. And so he accepted. And then when the consideration was brought to Gandhari, and she heard this was accepted by her father, she didn't have reservation, because she's Gandhari, she's the perfectly chaste person, and she immediately understood it won't work. He's blind and I can see. So even before they were married, she immediately placed this blindfold so she would also be blind, so she wouldn't be, I'm up here and my husband's down here. She purposefully, deliberately, consciously accepted a, as Prabhupada is saying here, of the same category as the husband position. Although she had the qualification, at least, you know, sight-wise, above her husband, beyond her husband. She accepted purposefully the situation where it wouldn't be like that. So her husband wouldn't feel like that, and she wouldn't feel like that. It's a super example. The word sama anuvrata, or what, samanuvrata, Samanuvrata has these three parts. Sama, Anu, Vrata. Vrata means vow, Anu means follow, and Sama means equal. So she placed herself in a position equal to her husband, and so she can look up and to him and serve him. The word Samanuvrata indicates that is the duty of the wife to adopt the special circumstances in which the husband is situated. So in this case, Kapila, Kardama Muni, is in a forest, living an ascetic life, but married. So his wife accepts the position of the ascetic wife, and accepts the same Sama Anuvrata, the special circumstances in which the husband is situated. Now it's going to reverse around, because he recognizes, look at how emaciated she is, and matted locks, and her health, who knows. And I know that she has a desire to have a child, and this isn't the right circumstance, so he creates a circumstance that's favorable for that, just by his mystic power. So he's not incapable, he's not insensitive, he's highly qualified. And he's feeling a great appreciation for the love and the service that she's offered, and so he makes these arrangements coming up. Of course, if the husband is as great as Kardama Muni, there is a very great result that accrues from following him. But even if the husband is not a great devotee like Kardama Muni, it is the wife's duty to adapt herself according to his mentality. That makes married life very happy. It is also mentioned herein that by following the strict vows of a chaste woman, Princess Devahuti became very skinny, and therefore her husband became compassionate. He knew that she was the daughter of a great king, and yet was serving him just like an ordinary woman. She was reduced in health by such activities, and he became compassionate and addressed her as follows. It wasn't a contractual thing, I did this, so you got to do that kind of relationship. It's not like that at all. She was just carrying on. She chose the situation of her own accord. Not like she agreed when it was presented to her. She spoke to her father, this is who I'd like to marry. So he went and explored the opportunity or possibility, and it was a yes. So it's not like, oh, poor Devahuti. It's something that she wished for, and she received it. At the same time, it was difficult. Now, her happiness was in serving her husband. And when someone is acting in a expression of loving service, they're happy to be in any situation. Prabhupada describes this directly in Nectar of Instruction, where he describes his disciples who came from very nice families are happy just to have a very simple life and sleeping on the floor, and you know, although they're not accustomed to life like that, but they're happy to live like that. So it's not like, oh, poor brahmacharis, or oh, poor devahuti. The devotee is happy in the position of service and happy in the position of simple living. They're not, oh, poor, simple living person. There's happiness, contentment on another platform than the having objects and trying to be the enjoyer of those objects and thinking, this is life. Now I made it. I need some more things, though. It's a much greater happiness. And with that much greater happiness, there's disinterest in things. Stuff, and So she's benefited in many, many ways, as mentioned, by serving this great personality and living and taking the position of the chaste wife who, samanuvrata, she's, whatever his position, I'll accept that position and serve and live accordingly. That's from her side, and then now it's mentioned in this verse from her husband's side, seeing this care and submission and way of life that she has adopted. That's not how she was how she grew up. She was accustomed to, who can imagine how much opulence she was accustomed to? Fine clothing and food and, you know, whatever it is people have that are wealthy, kingly, royal life. She was used to that, and she was happy doing the other. But he was appreciating her sacrifice, naturally so, and wished to accommodate her in a different way. You know, this was, so it's reciprocal, is the point. He was perfectly contented and happy in a certain way. He's going to shift that, what he's happy with and contented with and so forth, to accommodate the nature of his wife. It's not a contract, it's just the nature of a loving exchange. She didn't nag and, you know, whatever the whole thing that sometimes goes on. She just carried on. And intuitively he understood what would be a very good situation, at least for the purpose of producing children and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he, not like all munis or all brahmanas do like this, but he did like this. He had the capacity to, and he did. He created a aerial mansion out of mystic power. They fly around and all over the place, and not just in a forest. So, but it was a mystic machine. But he had that, he was a mystic. He had that capacity. So according to one's capacity, one may do this or that. He had enormous capacity. And a soft heart, as we'll see from what he says. Any comments or discussion? Yes. Working sanely and diligently, she pleased her husband.
Very powerful. Giving up all lust, pride, envy, greed, sinful activities, and vanity. How to understand that sinful activities in such a person like Devuti?
Yeah, well, she wasn't attached to, and then, oh, I guess I got to give up sinful activity. It was just, the point is, it was absent. No sinful activity. That's the point. Anything else? Yes.
So the sacrifice that Devaki made to some husband, and also the compassion shown by Katamuni, so it's an exchange of sacrificing each other. He's comfortably situated in whatever he was doing, but still he was providing for the satisfaction of his wife. So it's the exchange of the sacrifice itself is an essence of the happiness.
Yes.
So.
Well, it's an expression of the happiness. The essence is the mood of love itself. And it's an exhibition of that mood of love is where there's mutual sacrifice.
Yeah, so that comes from the mood of service. And
yes, it does.
This mood of service must be there.
From both sides, yeah. Correct.
And in that scenario, like, you know, when, in this case, Devahuti was saying that she was very careful not to become proud in being in that position. So, how was she actually doing that? Like, I will give up my pride, or I won't become pride in doing this service. And in
your question is how was she doing it?
Yeah. How not to become pride in doing herself?
Well, she had control of her mind and senses. Sama Dhamma, the Pakshocham. Persons that have control of their senses can, let's just say, I won't eat anything that's not offered to Krishna. So somebody offers you something that's not been offered to Krishna, and you just say no, thank you. It's control of the senses, rather than, well, what's the harm? And so just there's control of the senses, and control of the mind is similar. The intelligence can say to the mind, my dear mind, do not indulge in this, and control of the mind, the mind that's controlled by higher intelligence, obeys. So that's the how-to. By strength of higher intelligence and fueled by devotion, then the mind can give it up. Because the mind is the resting place of those things. So you look at the list, it's the six enemies. And she just gave them up. Means on the strength of devotion to her pure devotee husband, she had the strength to just, you know, give it up. So behind the giving it up was strength, and the strength of bhakti. In order to do anything, you need strength, and to do devotional things, you need spiritual strength. She had it. And the capacity was her devotion, and then she could do. Now, let's turn it around and say, well, what about us? Well, you know, we struggle. We can't just say, okay, pride, see you later. We struggle with it because our devotion isn't so strong. But intelligence saying it's not good is good, but it's not sufficient. Devotion must to be developed nicely. Than is possible. It's something like you heard the explanation I gave last night of the cart being pulled by the horse. So we often use the expression, don't put the cart before the horse. We should put the horse before the cart. Then the horse can pull the cart. So if we want such nice qualities as are listed here, how does a devotee get nice qualities? Is actually the question. How do we get good qualities? And you put the horse before the cart. So there's 26 qualities listed, primary qualities of a Vaishnava. Among them, one is primary, Sarup Lakshana, and the other are marginal. Tatastha Lakshana. Marginal characteristics is the cart. And the horse pulls the cart. The primary characteristic, Krishna Eka Sharana, is that which then enables, Krishna is very pleased by one who offers their full surrender unto him, and Krishna decorates the devotees with nice qualities. The 25 follow the one. You want the 25? Work on the one. And from working on the one, then when that becomes very strong, it's very important, when that becomes very strong, then what is the desire? That's like we chant Hare Krishna. The meaning is to awaken our desire to serve. We're praying for service. Krishna, please, at the most, oh, energy of Krishna, please engage me in the service. It's a pervasive mood of service. The Maha Mantra awakens our mood of service to Krishna. Okay, so as that becomes stronger, stronger and stronger, because you've practiced chanting very nicely, you want to please Krishna. So when you come before Krishna, you want Krishna to smile. And we know what makes Krishna smile, because he says it in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. When my devotee has this quality, that quality, that quality, that quality, they're very dear to me. He smiles. So how do you get those qualities and get rid of these impurities? The cart pulls the horse. The horse pulls the cart. Through devotion to Krishna. Krishna, please help me. Please endow me with this quality that's pleasing to you. I can't do it on my own. And vice versa, the shortcoming, vanity and pride and sinful activity and whatever the other things are. I need your mercy. So there's some endeavor, because there's five factors to action described in chapter 18, Bhagavad Gita. And one of them is endeavor. But the what fuels the endeavor is pleasing Krishna, which comes from chanting nicely and understanding the message of what our position is spiritually. Whatever worldly our position is, spiritually our position is, we're servants of Krishna. Everyone. The Karamuni and Devahuti and you and me and everybody, we're servants of Krishna. So on the strength of that consciousness, other qualities then become possible. That's where the strength comes from. And the intelligence comes from. How to. Yeah? Chanakya Pandit, yeah.
Yeah, Chanakya Pandit. So the first one is like, if father is in debt, he's considered to be an enemy. So can you elaborate a little more?
I just repeat what I heard Prabhupada say. The law of progenitor is that the son inherits the property of the father, but the son also inherits the death of the father. So without having done anything, the son gets debt. And he legally is obliged to perform and fulfill the debt. Legally, not besides morally. So if the father lives a reckless life and creates debt, it creates a burden for the child, although the child didn't do anything, the father did it. Enemy in that sense, not like, you know, go fight the guy or kind of enemy. That it puts one in difficulty before even doing anything, without even doing anything. You had something? Mataji.
He just came at the end of the class, and then I was...
You heard his question?
Yeah, answer to. I didn't hear the question, but I was listening to the answer that you gave. So, for somebody who's just started, like for me, initially the thought is like I have to serve Maharaj and serve Krishna and all the devotees in congregation very well. So, that is what drives whatever small service that you start doing. But then, in the course of this service, there are lots of tests in terms of doing it properly without any. Without hurting anybody, like doing it nicely so that everybody is pleased and not without any, any wrong doing from my part. So that's how I endeavor to start doing. But then in the course of time, because maybe I'm new to this or I'm ignorant of so many things, there are some mistakes that happen. And then for somebody who is starting, like when you, I know I have to get the strength from my prayers and chanting, but then there is something tells me that the strength is derived from doing what you are doing right, and then when you do it right, you tend to get encouragement. So that is the normal thing. But when you are doing something, some mistakes, then that kind of puts you down, and then after that, how to come over it and then do what you endeavor to do in the beginning very well. I don't know if I...
I got it. It's a lot of emotion and some clarity. There's a phrase that you'll learn. You would very popular in the Potomac Temple congregation is book distribution, and I'm going to share with you something that I learned from book distribution that applies to what you're saying. Endeavor is the perfection. What is pleasing to my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, in my many hundreds and thousands of hours of book distribution, was not simply how many books, but the endeavor, like, you know, the sacrifice of trying, going out of my way with, you know, inconveniencing myself because it's not my nature to go up and meet people I don't know and say, here's something that you don't want, please take one. But it's pleasing to my spiritual master that I undergo that, make that, take that. And then there's some people that want it. And anyway, so it's not the result, it's the endeavor. The endeavor is the perfection. And some people are really good, and some people are not really good. I was one of those that wasn't so good. But that didn't matter. I learned that it doesn't matter. So that's a lesson for you to learn too. That Krishna will help you how to do nicely. And one other point is it's an unrealistic expectation, like an important lesson of life, that you're going to please everybody. Not a realistic expectation. Or even that you're going to do things, whatever the standard that you think or somebody else thinks, it's perfect. We can strive, we can endeavor to do things so nicely and still not do them nicely. And that's okay, because it's the striving, it's the devotion with which you're striving that Krishna sees and accepts. And the good news is, he'll help you to do it better and better and better and better. And every directly in Bhagavad Gita, here's the last point. In every endeavor, there's some type of fault. it's not just you. You know, every one of us. Every living entity, in every endeavor, there's some type of fault. So what are you going to do? Go cry or sit, you know, sit in a corner and do nothing because I'll make some faults? You can't do that. You make sincere endeavor and rely on Krishna seeing the sincere endeavor and giving you the intelligence. You can inquire from people that are experienced at this and that and the other thing. How do I do it nicely? And they'll guide you. And then and the essence is then not, oh, I did it better, now I'm happy. Because then when there's a mistake, oh, I didn't do it better this time. Then the happiness and distress is determined by circumstances. That's not transcendental. Transcendental is you make a sincere effort to please, as you started, the premise of your question. And so that's the principle to live with. Receive training and guidance in the how-to, what are the nuances and everything. All right? Yes.
You said that wife, she commits adultery, she's an enemy to the family. But in today's, mostly in Indian families, we see where wives don't commit adultery, but however, they put a lot of pressure on the husbands for material desires, more money, and...
Really?
And particularly when they work.
It's a secret, you're not supposed to say those things publicly. Go ahead.
And, what is the advice for a wife who does kind of things? Is she a considered enemy if she puts pressure on her husband for money? And
wait a minute now. Wait. You really stretched that one. Started with adultery, and now it's pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see adultery. I don't see adultery in Indian families.
Whether it's Indian families or Chinese families or purple families or green families, it's a speak principle, not Indian families. Many things. We all have our imperfections. And if the husband was perfect and the wife was perfect, if there were such a thing as the husband is perfect and the wife is perfect, then we won't have those things. But we're not perfect. So there's always going to be some things and some other things and sometimes more things, sometimes less things, but always something. It's just the life of imperfection, the life of this world. Now how does a husband and a wife live together happily? We're hearing some of these principles. And so now we're in the anomaly zone where it's not perfect, but they wish to live happily together. So there's, I'll say it in a principle, and then you can consider to your best intelligence and ability how to apply the principle. Something that I heard Prabhupada say, give and trust, give and take based on love and trust. So the husband sees that the wife has such and such propensity. The wife sees the husband has such and such propensity. And they're not, you know, not an identical match, commonly. So there's some acknowledgement of this nature and that nature, and sometimes it's this, so as husband and wife, sometimes things will go this way, sometimes things will go that way, and nobody's keeping score. Very important. I've sacrificed so much and it's always your way, how come it's not my way? So there should be the finger pointing program, so it should be acknowledging of nature. And like with Karnava Muni, acknowledging the nature of his wife. And You know, then so give and take, sometimes this way, sometimes that way. It's not just husband-wife, it's relationships. It's relationships of any kind. A friend, or parent and child. Sometimes this way, sometimes that way. Based on love and trust. And if you don't have trust, you're not going to have love. So the real important thing is not, does she do this or does he do that? The important thing is the love and trust. And the important thing of trust is being worthy of trust. You know, everything starts with our qualification to be trustworthy, and then we can have a loving relationship, and then we can have give and take without keeping score. Start with the integrity of the individual being trustworthy, as with Kardama Muni and Devahuti. She didn't go whine and complain, but he understood what her need was. He wasn't thinking, oh, I'm really happy she's being quiet about her need, we'll just keep going. He understood her need, and he took care of it. In natural course. That's speaking on the ideal. Now we'll come down to where we are. I'm sharing with you something that a group of devotees who are engaged in extending care to others. It's not the same as parent and children or husband and wife, but the principle of relationship where you're extending care to others. So it's a principle. And just repeating the same point. We wish to have amongst ourselves and amongst those who we're extending care to, loving, if we can have loving exchanges up here, it's the role model for those who we're guiding to see, oh, that's what it's like. You have loving relationships. But how to have a loving relationship starts with the trust in one another. And when there's trustworthiness, then there's trust. It's a whole other paradigm is a leader. I've taught this in China. They translated it into Chinese. You know, they're characteristics of a leader. And where it garners trust by the quality and the conduct of a leader, then the people follow the leader. It's the same thing in husband-wife. It's just, you know, the details are different, but the principle is so much the same. And it comes to, you know, being trustworthy. Then the followers are willing to follow. The wife is willing to follow. Wife is willing to follow. And the husband, it's not like, now I'm the king, she's following me. But it's reciprocation, it's give and take. Then it's love. It's something like trying to adjust the shadow without adjusting the object that's casting the shadow. It's our consciousness is what creates the dynamic of a willingness to move from where we were to where we would like to go, or those persons who we're with would wish for us to go to. You know, a more wholesome position. It's a nice challenge. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.